If we view this experience of humanity as a journey, or our experience as followers of Christ as a road trip, we can look at this whole dynamic life that way, and we can compare it to things that we learn about when we take trips on the road. And that's what we've been doing for the last several weeks, and specifically here the last few weeks we've been talking about what does the finances have to do with this journey? What is money? Where does money play? It plays in for sure on road trips and vacations, but how does our money relate with our faith? And sometimes you hear people talk about church and they say, all they ever talk about at church is money. Well, really, I can tell you in the last couple of years that isn't the case here, because this is the first time since I've been here we've really talked about it. And even that, this is the third week in it, and we haven't talked about money yet. We've been talking about something a little bit more broader than that. We've been talking about stewardship and what it means for us as followers of Christ to be great stewards of the things that we've been given. And one of the passages that we've been using here and tapping into pretty extensively here is from 1 Peter, that says, like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. And that's this broader picture of how it is that we handle the many resources that we have, money included. Because it is all part of God's grace. Every good thing that we have is a gift from God. And it is that awesome grace of God that you and I have so many things. And it is those important things that we have. Your very life is one of those things that God has graced you with, and His forgiveness, the reason you are here, that you are brought in right relationship with Him, is because of the forgiveness that we find in Christ. That is one of the pieces of the manifold grace that we have, and we are to be stewards of that. And our very relationship that we currently have with God because of what Christ has done, that's a grace. That is a thing we've been given. What are we doing with that? Your health, your family, your relationships, your jobs, your kids, your sports, your activities, all your interests, the passions you have, this church, and yeah, your money as well. Those are all pieces of this manifold grace that we have. And we've tried to look most deeply into that idea that we have been graced by so much, and what is it that we have there, and to understand that all of this is on loan. That's a good way to think about all that stuff you have, trucks and cars and boats and skills, all that stuff that's on loan. It is here just for a while, much like the other story we've been talking about is when Jesus tells us the story about when he's going to leave like a man that leaves, and he leaves big quantities of money with these people. Three guys, and they get big chunks. One gets $2.5 million, another one gets $1 million, another gets $500,000. Not chunk change. They were called talents in the Bible, and it was worth a lot of money. But it was on loan. These people had this money for a while because there was going to be a day when the master comes back. He said, what'd you do? What'd you do with that cash that I gave you? That's how that story goes. And that is for us to know, too. What have we done with these great riches that He has entrusted you and me with? We have been entrusted with so much, yeah, and money is a part of it, but so much more. And I think that is the broad question that you and I, we need to constantly ask ourselves regarding that passage there. What is it we are doing in this limited amount of time that we have here with all of these awesome resources God has graced us with? What are we doing with that? I think that's an ongoing question that you and I need to keep asking ourselves. What are we doing with these things that we have? But what about the giving to this church? What about the part of this? What about these resources I have? How does that play out here at the church? And not, it's just not money there as well. Those resources you have, the gifts that you have, the abilities you have, the skills you have, the talents you have, the relationships you have, how do those tie in with this body of Pleasant Chapel? Because that is fulfilling that passage from 1 Peter as well, that you are good stewards of what you have. How are you using what you have for this church? And regarding money, hopefully then we'll think here that it's just a small part, because how you use all of your money can be done in a way that honors God. Trips that you take, you know, those are expensive things. We've been talking about that. But when you know, I believe when you take a trip with your family and you're shelling out cash, I think that's a good stewardship of your money, because you're creating a space where you have these awesome family members where you're getting to spend time together. And I think God is honored by that. And I think He takes great joy in that as well. I think that is being a good steward of your money. Similarly, your homes. Homes cost a lot of money, moms and dads, for that is for sure. But I think that is another attribute of being a good steward. You are creating a wonderful home for your family to be able to grow up in and to be loved by you. That is being a good steward of your money. Hobbies and interests as well. I believe that is good stewardship as well. And I think God has joy in the things that He's caused you and me to be interested in. I think He smiles if you like to hunt or fish or knit or whatever, poetry or painting or pottery or whatever. That's a lot of P's. But I think there's joy in that. He's given us these things to do. And I think when we do that, He has joy in that, and that's being good stewardship as well. Not only, I think, do those things that we do develop great character, but I think God enjoys seeing us participate in them. And using your money as one of those things to help out those around you, I think, demonstrates this generous spirit that we are called to have and to possess. We're called to take care of those people that are less fortunate than us. And when you share your finances with people that are in need, I believe that is being a good steward of your resources. And then I can go on and on with this list to show how we can use our money for the glory of God. And it's really about, I think, changing that perspective of ours. That when we really start looking at how I can honor God with everything, that changes things. We become more God-centered and less people-centered or less self-centered. But what about that offering plate? We're finally getting there after 2.5 weeks here. We're talking about the offering and this muddy thing that we've introduced 3 weeks ago. And I think typically when you hear people, you know, the ones that will say, oh, they were talking about money. Well, I think what those turn into a lot of times is there's some sort of financial drive campaign at the end of the year to get people to commit to helping plan for budgets and those kinds of things at the beginning of the year. And they start asking the questions, you know, what is the financial responsibility of a congregant as it relates to the church financially? How does that play out? And that's what we want to talk about here for just a bit. But, you know, hopefully, here in the last couple of weeks, you see that my view on this is much more broad. I believe that this is just a small part of a bigger picture there is for you and I as being disciples of Christ. It's about demonstrating stewardship in all we have, all the things we have, including this money. Just a few moments ago, you know, part of our worship service as we stopped and we passed these things around here and we put some stuff in them, we brought them up front and we laid them on our altar or laid them on our table. And what's that about? What is that? Last week I took it away. Remember that? So we're just not going to do it today. We're not going to have that offering because I wanted to shake it up a little bit. And I wanted us to think a little bit about, you know, that's something we do. It's part of our worship service. Every Sunday we stop and Joanne plays an offertory thing, and we pass this thing, and do this, and then we stand up and sing the doxology and bring it up here. And so we took it away just to kind of force you to think about that a little bit. What is this time really about? What is it that we are doing here as part of our worship? What is this money being used for? Where does it go? And I used the illustration last week that it isn't this direct giving to God. If you remember last week, if it was this direct giving, I talked about the pastor that some of you know says, you know, here's what we do. We take it, we throw it up in the air, and we just tell God, whatever you want, you keep. Whatever falls back down, you know, no, we don't do that. It isn't a direct gift to God. So what is it? What is this all about? So I want to share just a little bit about, you know, when the money comes into the church, we're going to step aside here just a little bit and talk a little bit about how the finances in a church like this work a little bit. Qualifier before we get into this is, I don't know jack about finance, so I'm kind of winging it here a little bit, and I'm going to keep looking at John, and if I see him doing this, we're okay. If I see him doing that, then Joanne, get ready, we're going to play a song, and we're going to go home if I screw this up, but I think we'll be okay. But just to get a feel for sort of how this works, I looked at our budget. Now, this won't be precise because money in the church is dependent upon what comes in and what new things come out, but we make a plan for how money is going to be used. So this will give us an idea kind of how the money is used. And to simplify this a little bit, I got thinking about church. And I think church really does kind of, there's two parts to it. There's this part that's internal. We've created this space and place for us to do stuff. And that's kind of what we're doing here. And so the stuff that I called it in on the inside here would be like we need a place to worship in community. We worship throughout the week individually, but we come here together right now to worship and praise God, and we need a space for that. So I have worship as part of the internal parts of the church. And also this is the place where we have fellowship. We get together with other believers in this community, and we need a space and place for that as well. So fellowship kinds of things is a big part of what churches do. And then finally, the discipleship thing here is how we learn, how we come together in Sunday school classes and Bible studies and Sunday school, I said that, small group kinds of things where we learn about Christ and we learn about how he's calling us to become. So the internal things about what we do as a group is the orange part there. And that takes about 77% of our budget. Our budget's roughly $52,000 a year. So 77% of that is basically on making this all work. Specifically, it's things like, you know, paying for the lights and the air conditioner and salary. You pay me here to do that. Insurance. The physical kinds of things to keep this space working. The internal part. Make sense? The other part of the church is what goes out, because we are called to go and make disciples, and that's part of what church does. We go out and we do things. And so anything that goes out to evangelize, to help spread the good news of Jesus Christ, is called evangelism, and that would be something is working out, and that's in that blue section that is there. Anytime we try to help take care of the needs of people outside of our church, any type of mission or ministry that's outside of the church would be stuff that's on the outside. And that takes about 23% of our budget. So kind of a generic way of thinking about this money that comes in, it goes, and that's sort of how then it gets distributed. Got a nod from John. I'm okay on slide one. All right. The next one here shows a little bit. I wanted to break down that other one just so you know a little bit, because we're kind of unique in a United Methodist Church here a little bit. The 16 and the 7, that's still the out part. That is our outgoing part. That's evangelism and missions, ministry out beyond our walls here. And because we're a United Methodist Church, the majority of what we do here from a monetary perspective is done through the big United Methodist Church. We pay part of our giving that goes to what's called apportionments. And so a percentage of what is taken in here goes to the annual conference. It'd be Indiana Annual Conference. Another smaller, that's 10%. Another smaller percent, 1%, goes to the Northeast District. I think I have the wrong word up there. I should say Northeast District. Yeah. So 11% of that 16% there actually goes to those two things, and then another 5% for special programs like UNICEF and UMCOR and some other things that our annual conference will ask for money on. So that is the financial part of the connectiveness of this church, because we are a worldwide United Methodist Church. Some of our funds go out, and that's how hospitals can be built. Pretty tough for Pleasant Chapel by itself to build a hospital. But because we're connected to a large body of United Methodist Church, this allows us to participate in a big, grander church. And that's just unique for United Methodist Church, because we are denominational, world-linked, networked church is how that's used. So that's kind of our budget then. But then there are some other funds here that we want to talk about. The general budget we just talked about, but then we also take money in. Sometimes you'll write on your envelope, this is for missions, and you'll put a certain amount of money that goes in missions, and that's outside of the general budget. And that'll go to some things that are local, some things that are worldwide. Basher Homes, one we do. Love, Inc. is another one we do. Those are all the ones that every quarter, I think Jill will come up and she'll announce that this year's missions dollars, or this quarter's mission dollars, went to here. So that's another place that money comes in and goes out. Our trustees are kept separately. So sometimes people give gifts for the trustees, and basically that's for some of the bigger project kind of things that we need to do here, like perhaps a bathroom project or a roofing project, that is all managed through the trustees account. And we have fundraisers for the trustees dollars, and other people give gifts for that as well. United Methodist Women have their own funds that they gather through fundraising and through giving, and they use that money for their needs as well. And then if there's any other special project that needs to take place, sometimes that's just handled a little bit differently as well. So that gives you kind of a sort of a once over, a little bit of John. All right, we're good. I get back to something else here, but yeah, I didn't know some of that stuff. You know, for 50 some years here, I've been part of a church. I don't know how that all works, and honestly, I don't really care to. That's somebody else's gift and their talent to be able to do that, but I wanted to share that because I think that helps a little bit on how it is that we do use our money. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but I'm kind of odd. Don't shake your head on that one. That wasn't one of those audience feedback times, but there's something during worship service, if you've caught it, that I don't do. It's a little bit different because I have a little trouble with this. When we do this thing here, there's a couple of words that I don't like using, and I want you to talk about this a little bit. I don't use the word offering, and I don't use the word tithe. You know, a lot of churches will say it's time to take up our tithes and offerings, and I don't use that. I usually just say it's now time that our ushers will receive the morning's giving, are normally my words. Anybody ever notice that? I don't use the words offering and tithe, and I want to talk about that just a little bit for you today. Now, I'm not saying that that's wrong. I'm not saying what we do here is wrong, but I think there is something that can be sort of twisted a little bit, that can be some wrong thinking here and could be interpreted incorrectly. People will say that they are bringing their offering or their tithe to God, and that is a biblical thing. Or they will say that this is a biblical principle to present an offering or a tithe. And maybe principle is the right word there, but I think by itself it can be a little bit ambiguous here regarding us that are people of the Bible, but we are New Testament people. First, let's talk about offering. Biblically, if you're going to think about offering, it is most often associated in the Old Testament as part of the Old Testament law for the Jewish people. And they were required by the law to bring offerings to God. And you'll find these written, a lot of them, in the books of Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Numbers. That's where the specifications for the offerings were given. And it was a requirement for people to do this. And oftentimes it was done for the purpose of making atonement for sins. When you sin, you'd bring an offering to God for that to be taken care of, because that was this system, a law that people were under. And for them to be forgiven required an offering. And how this worked, how this would work to appease God, it was done in such a way that it would keep his wrath away. And hopefully that's not what we're thinking about when we bring up an offering to present to God. Is it to keep wrath away? I hope not. How this would work was the sinner would come to the church and John come up. No, I'm kidding. But the sinner would come up to the church or the temple at the time, and he would present an offering, like an animal or something, and he'd bring it to the priest. And they would have a prayer there, and the priest would require the sinner place his hands on the animal while he slaughtered that animal. And the idea there is the sin is being transferred, from the sinner to the animal. And as that animal was sacrificed, that atoned for that sin. Blood then was taken from that animal, and it was sprinkled on the altar. And the animal was then taken and placed on that altar. It was an offering to God for the atonement of sin, to appease God so his wrath wouldn't come. On an altar, an offering was made. You see where I'm going with this a little bit? See where there can be some confusion there, because that's not what it is we do here. That isn't at all the system that we are in here. We don't bring in this stuff so God doesn't get mad at us. And that kind of is the idea of offering in the Bible. And that, I don't believe, is what we're doing. There's one of my favorite passages in the New Testament, I think, brings light to this a little bit so that we are more sure about what the offering really is here. It's found in the 10th chapter of Hebrews. And it says, first he said, sacrifices and offerings, burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not desire, nor were you pleased with them, although the law required them to be made. God wasn't pleased with all these offerings, but they were yet required to be made. Then he said, Jesus, here I am, I have come to do your will. He, Jesus, sets aside the first to establish the second. What a powerful verse right there. In that passage, he's saying that the old has been set aside. The law and the requirements of the law have been set aside in order for the second to come. He sets aside the first to establish the second. And by that will, we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. But when the priest has offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. The priest, we're talking about Christ, when that one sacrifice, when he shed his blood on the cross, that is the sacrifice, that is the offering once for all, it's done, and he sat down at the right hand of God. That puts a finish to the requirements of the law of the Old Testament. Verse 13 says, since that time, he waits for his enemies to made his footstool, because by one sacrifice, he has made perfect forever those who are being made holy. It's done. The offering system is done. Because of the cross, it's completed. And we don't make offerings in that sense anymore, that we're, you know, I did bad this week, so I better put a few more bucks in the plate. No. That's not what this is at all. And that's why I hesitate on the word offering, because when you read offering in the Bible, that is the kind of offering people were most associated with. And that isn't what we're doing. We are not trying to appease God's wrath or please him, or we're not trying to benefit in some way for personal gain. I think when we do that, we miss the mark. Christ is our once and for all offering to God. Christ is our offering. And that's why I don't like using that word, offering, here. Similarly, the word tithe. If you look at tithe in the Bible, tithe by definition is just a tenth. It is a tenth of the grain offerings the grain that people produced. And when you look at this, that's what a tithe was. And people will claim that is biblical. Well, yeah, it is. If you go back and you read that is exactly what it was. They were to give a tenth of the grain from their crops. That's what they would bring in. And we call that biblical, and so you'll have a lot of people say that that's what the church needs to be doing. They need to be tithing. They need to be having this 10% requirement here that the law says. Well, I think that's true. It is biblical, but I think that the tithe in the Bible is just as biblical as animal sacrifice, but we didn't keep that around. I think it's just as biblical as not allowing you to eat pork and shellfish. I'd have trouble with that one, you know? But we kind of wanted to keep this one thing. We kind of want to keep the 10% tithe thing. Well, then you probably ought to keep the other part that says you can't have shrimp and a pork chop. Man, our tenderloin suppers would be hurting, wouldn't it? We'd have to come up with something different there. Wouldn't work. You know, or the other part of the law, you know, you can eat cheese and you can have burger. Can't have a cheeseburger, though, because that's in the law. So if you're going to say that this is biblical and we're going to keep this, that 10% is biblical, then you better keep all that stuff, because I think that is all the same kind of thing. So if it's not 10%, well, what should we give? To me, it's a matter of faith. I think your giving is an expression of your faith that God is working through this church to accomplish his will. And so then I believe we need to look at that as an expression of our faith. It is not a requirement. It is not to appease God. It's not a tax. It's not a tithe. And it's not some fixed percentage that you are required to give. He doesn't need it. He doesn't need your money. That's another thing we might think about. Well, God probably needs this $20, but no, he doesn't need it. It's all his anyways. He does not need it. He wants our hearts. He wants our commitment to Him, and it's going to be evidenced, I think, by our faith. How much is it that we are trusting this church in our faith? Here are perhaps some questions that we can think about here regarding this, because it's part of the big stewardship. How does faith and stewardship and my giving to this church relate? How much faith do you have in this local church? How much faith do you believe that this is a place and space where people are going to be connected with God? How much faith do you have that this is where people's discipleship will increase? How much faith do you have that this is where people will be introduced to the saving good news of Jesus Christ? How much faith do you have that this space and this place and this people and its ministries will help the gospel of Christ be spread? How much faith do you believe that this is the place where the needs of the people in our community will be met? Yeah, those are the questions, I think. What percentage? Well, there is no percentage, but I think as families, you probably sit down and you talk about this a little bit. And you go, well, what percentage should we do here? And that's okay to think that way, but don't ever think that it's some requirement. And you're going to get to some number and it's going to be perfect. Because personally, I think some people, a 0.5% is good because that's what they can do. And that is sacrificial and it's generous and that's what they can do. I think other people can do 80 to 90%. You could give that much to the church. Think about it. If you're making $10 million a year, how much do you really need? You ought to be giving a bunch of that away. So what percentage is that? Well, I think that's what you need to work through. 10% tithe. Well, maybe. I don't know. That's what people will push. The average churches give between 2 and 3%. That's normally what they give. That's a fact. We did an informal thing a few weeks ago just to kind of get a general idea of what we do here. This church, roughly based on, you know, a survey about 25 people here, we're around 4.3% of, you take your income, how much are we giving to the church here, came out to be 4.3. So we're above that average, whatever that means. But when you think about that, and when you, you know, this I think is an ongoing conversation that I think you have in your families. You know, what should we be doing here? What is this church about? What kind of changes do I believe that this church is going to be a part of? Those, I think every year at least, I think families need to go through and think about that. What is your financial commitment here? And more than likely, because the way we plan budgets, it will be some percent. I'm not saying 10%, but if the average giving is between 2 and 3%, and let's say that everybody in the churches decided to give 10%, what would that mean? I found this, I thought, was really interesting. If all the churches would get to the 10% that some people think is biblical, there would be about $165 billion more dollars that the church could use. Well, what could they do with that? This is what this author said. $25 billion could relieve global hunger, starvation, and deaths from preventable diseases in 5 years. Wiped out. $12 billion could eliminate illiteracy in 5 years. $15 billion could solve the world's clean water and sanitation issues. $1 billion could fully fund all overseas missions work. Every overseas mission would be funded by $1 billion. That leaves $100 to $110 billion still left over for additional ministry and expansion. And a Maserati for the pastor at Pleasant Chapel United Methodist. It's not in there. Isn't that something? You know, there was a time where the church took care of a lot of the needs of society. We did that. The percentage of giving in the Depression is more than what the average giving is today. It was more than that, 2.3%, closer to 5%. In the Depression, when money was tight. And the church was taking care of the needs of the people. And now I think we're relying on our government to do some of the things that maybe our church could do. And this author says, you know what? The church was doing this. We could take care of a lot of these problems. We can make these things go away. Individually for you, I think this is something that's a talk that you, your family needs to have and be prayerful about it to God and see what He has for you. But I think it ought to be something that is sacrificial, it's joyful, and I think it is generous. Paul says in 2 Corinthians, each of you should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And I think that this journey that you and I are on, this journey of faith back to the road trip, I think our fuel is faith. That is what we run on. And I think when we have that talk with God and ourselves about financially participating in this church, whatever it is, I hope when that journey comes to its end that our master will say to those two great stewards of those talents, to you and I, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. What a wonderful promise we have there from our Lord, that be a great stewards of what you have now, and you ain't gonna believe what you got to see when I return. Let's pray.